Len Apkar, editor of the online New York Times. Broadly speaking, what's the blog effect on traditional journalism, do you think?
It's hard to say at this stage because blogs are relatively new. It's clear that blogs are a source of energy and persistence among certainly some of the bloggers because they face some technical hurdles. They're also a source of news and information, and whenever you are generating news from the ground up, information from the ground up, journalism, I think, of all degrees and scales are going to take an interest. That's certainly the case with us at the New York Times on the web. We're looking at blogs to better understand how these are not only a news gathering tool, but also a tool for disseminating information at nytimes.com, at the newspaper, at New York Times Television, any number of outlets that the company has.
Let's talk about the New York Times and the New York Times Online. You surprised me. I didn't realize that the more people read the paper online, like me, than by the dear old spreadsheet.
That's very true. That's been true for a little more than a year. NYTimes.com does not charge a subscription fee, so it's a little bit of an apples and orange comparison. The paper, of course, is subscription or newsstand cost. But NYTimes.com asks you to register. What that means is we collect some demographic information, we collect some emails and other things about you, but it allows us to build an audience, know something about our audience, and to take it to advertisers. So we have been entirely or virtually advertising supported. On a given day, more than 1 million to 1.5 million folks come to NYTimes.com at least once a day. We don't count you if you come twice or more. That's more than the paper. On weekdays, it's probably closer to 1.5 million. On weekends, it's over 1 million. It averages out to somewhere about 1.3 million, 1.4 million. During huge news events like the war in Iraq, we were up as much as 2.5 million individuals coming counted once. That's an astounding number. It tells us that we can extend our journalism beyond the readership of the paper.
And I come many times a day because the beauty of the online paper, unlike the paper, is that you're updating 4:32 p.m., you know, bomb in Israel or whatever.
That's very true. One of the things that I like to say about NYTimes.com is that we are the New York Times during the day. From midnight last night to midnight tonight, we are the paper. The paper closes roughly around midnight or so and is printed all over the country. But once that snapshot of events is taken and the presses start to roll, news doesn't wait for a daily morning newspaper anymore. And oftentimes, we are now generating a couple of dozen stories a day online, in addition to what we give you from the wires and other news agencies, to give readers of our paper and our online report a sense of the world around them, both at home and abroad.
So interesting. I remember asking Joe Lederer on the radio one time when this transition was just happening. I said, well, Joe, what is the real edition of the day? And he said, well, there is not exactly a real edition anymore. And I said, yes, there is. The real edition is the one that goes on the publisher's desk at 9 o'clock in the morning or whenever he comes in. And he said, no, that's not quite right anymore. Is there a real, certifiable, Smithsonian, Library of Congress, formal record edition of the New York Times anymore?
There is still a final edition, a late final edition, that comes out after midnight. Its circulation is quite small in comparison to the other press runs. It's the very last press run, and it goes to some of the most close-in neighborhoods in New York. However, and it is also the one that you get on, that you get, you certainly get online, and you certainly get through the various archival services that the New York Times articles are stored in, whether it's LexisNexis, Factiva, Dow Jones, any of those services. But that's just a bookmark. It, as important as it is, it's a bookmark for the day, and once that's set and typed and archived, then things continue to evolve online. So much happens now after the paper closes, particularly with stories like the war in Iraq, the aftermath in Iraq, the space shuttle, any number of stories you can think of this year, the power failure and the blackout, all of these things happen between the paper's closings. You no longer have to wait for the paper. The paper is essential in many respects. It is the grand long form report of the New York Times and the judgment of the editors, and we don't minimize that at all. In fact, we think they're complementary. But between the morning editions, the editions that arrive in your doorstep, your mailbox, the mornings, the New York Times Online is a great complement to the whole paper.
When we talk about the New York Times, we're talking about the Vatican of American institutional journalism. I want to know how you deal with this new population of bloggers. As they like to say, they can fact check your ass before the paper hits the street. They can be arguing with Paul Krugman's column or about it, or Maureen Dowd's, or updating you on news from Africa or Central Europe. How do you respond?
To bloggers per se, I think I'm here looking at the blogging. At the blogging movement, if you will, the evolution of blogs, particularly blogs as news vehicles, because we're interested in news. We are a news company. We are a terrific newsroom and a news report, and I want to better understand the news side of blogs. So many blogs are not so news centered. They tend to be personal or opinion. That interests me less. What I'm more interested in are the creative, industrious bloggers who are turning up new information, good, solid information that can be the basis for our own report, that can be a source of information to our readers as they are. And I'm wondering if the New York Times, and I come here really as a student here at this conference here at Harvard this weekend, I come here really to learn and to discern what is working, what is not working, what fits in our sense of news and journalism, and can the New York Times be comfortable with a weblog that we might invent ourselves in such a way that we can generate a real-time report on a number of different levels, whether it's a blog about opera, whether it's a blog about politics.
Did you hear Jay Rosen's image yesterday of the Martin Scorsese picture of these two gangs? You got the bloggers that are trying to learn journalism, and they're marching on the journalists who are trying to learn blogging. I mean, has that image occurred to you? Did it strike home?
Well, there's clearly an apprehension among a lot of the individualists who keep their own weblogs that big media is going to seize this technology, this movement, and distort it, manipulate it, edit it, censor it.
Have fun with it, make money on it.
Bend it in some way that will spoil this grand self-indulgent party that bloggers are enjoying. And I don't mean to denigrate the bloggers at all. I think that there's definitely a misunderstanding about big journalism. And it surprises me, actually, that some bloggers are not quite that up to date on what's happened with big media on the internet. And I think many of them in the room are surprised to know that the nytimes.com is larger than the paper every day in terms of daily readership on average, that we are interested in this as a news gathering as well as a news dissemination tool. And we may be interested in it as well as a basis for opinion journalism. A vehicle for opinion journalism, and that a lot of things that are happening at nytimes.com, they could be comfortable with. In other words, we have experimented on our own site with a blog form, very crude, very simple blog by one of our opinion op-ed columnists.
Don't downplay it. That's important news. With Nicholas Kristof, in addition to writing his column, is blogging to the universe.
That's right. Nick Kristof, who writes a column twice a week on the op-ed page, is also blogging because when he took his job, he was more or less encouraged by the publisher and by his editor to write more than twice a week. right for the web. And we looked for a way to do this in a convenient way when he set off to go report from Iraq and write columns from Iraq. The bloggers are all very sensitive to big media being a heavy-handed overlord editor, an editing culture. And my answer to them is, we trust Nick Kristof. Nick Kristof is an accomplished reporter and columnist and correspondent, first for the newsroom and now for the editorial page. I don't have to be constantly looking over Nick's shoulder, and we can be comfortable with that. And I think that that can extend to other individuals as well as to other forms of web journals.
Let's talk about the extensions of it. You've mentioned the possibility, say, of having a campaign reporter's blog, campaign reporters plural, in which they all dished a little bit. It would be kind of like the boys on the bus covering the boys on the bus in the pages of the New York Times in real time, or at least under the aegis of the New York Times. Explain how that could work.
Well, I'm still thinking about it, and it's just an idea that I have floated with at the Times itself. But I have wondered whether the campaign gives us an opportunity, the presidential campaign and the primaries, as fast-paced as they are, faster and faster every time the country goes about this, as compressed as the calendar is, if there is a smart way to use the web journal medium as a means to cover not only the candidates, but also the media covering the candidates. And if there would be an interest here of either merging the two, what is said on the trail, as well as how the candidates and the media interact, or whether in fact there may be a separate journal. Where
wait a minute. Now, of course, there's interest. We all love to talk. Even plain folk love to hear what's Johnny Apple really like. Who's getting along with who? What do you really think of McGovern? You wrote that profile, but you know, is Reagan as smart or as stupid as people think he is? There's endless interest in the story behind the story.
There is, to a point, I think. I think journalists sometimes can easily fall into the trap of overestimating just how much of an interest there is in this, how wide and broad the interest is.
Come on, we're all gossips, and this is...
I think journalists love to know this stuff, but I don't know whether 1.5 million people want to know this every day. At the New York Times on the web.
I've never been to a dinner party where they don't turn to the journalist and say, come on, what's it really like?
Well, you may be right. You may be right, and that's one of the reasons why we're considering some kind of running journal that looks at the feel, the texture, the personalities, the tensions, some of the dramas of the campaign, both in terms of the folks on the bus, and it's not just boys anymore, it's boys and girls, and as well as some of the issues. A lot of this does not get into the newspaper every day. The paper itself has all sorts of space considerations. One of the great beauties, it's both the blessing and the curse of the internet, is that there are not space considerations. We think about time, and we think about making the report concise and efficient, elegant, simple in its navigation so that you can get the information you want quickly and go on about your day. We think a lot about that, so we're not just in the business of filling up the internet full of things that we don't have room for in the paper. That's not journalism. That's not what we do. But I have wondered whether there is a creative way to capture a lot of this drama, a lot of the news, a lot of the feel for what is every 4 years, frankly, up close, a dramatic, fascinating event. It thinks about its policies and its leadership.
Well, let's talk about the obstacles, too. I mean, the New York Times has an august reputation. It is the majestic last word on things. How can you combine that sort of seal of approval that the New York Times treasures with the informality, the unrestricted, open, irreverent, unedited voice of the blogosphere?
This is where this is what I mean by I'm here to learn and to come back, go back and ponder how we might invent a blogging vehicle, a daily journal vehicle that we would be comfortable with, that would bring true value to the reader, true information to the reader, and be unlike anything else on the web. The Times has always had the aspiration, we usually deliver on it, of trying to, when we try to do something, whether it's a section on science or a section on art or a section on travel or a section on books, to invent a new level. And I keep thinking there must be a way we can create our own sense of what bloggers have done, and make this something that we could give to our readers and we could be comfortable with as a means of informing readers. So I don't have all the answers right now, and I know that there are pitfalls, and I know that some blogs are not journalism, but I also know that there are some terrifically informative blogs that are breaking news, shaping events, and that the New York Times has always been an information leader, and we cannot ignore this. We need to be involved in thinking about it and thinking about how it can be adapted to our purposes and our standards for our audience.
Do you ever suppose, Len, that it's actually a matter of survival almost? I read the news now, and I think on the internet we've discovered ways. You know, the Baghdad blogger is the most famous example. Baghdad Burning is another blogger, enormously insightful about Iraq today. And the world is discovering ways, almost as good as sending John Burns of the New York Times to the spot, to learn about the real world, to learn about it in its own accents, with a deep authenticity. As you say, there is terrific information on that internet, and it comes instantly, free, fast, all over the world. Sometimes I think the New York Times is on the spot. Institutional journalism has got to learn an awful lot fast and probably break some of the old rules. What do you think?
Well, you really raised several issues. I think a lot of our report, since you mentioned John Burns and our foreign report, so much of what the New York Times is about opening worlds to folks who might not otherwise have exposure to them. Bringing back to our readers some detail, some texture, some life about Iraq or Kosovo or some of the great centers of world tension and stress, as well as some of the great places in the world where beauty and culture and majesty exist. That's all of what we do, and we invest a tremendous amount as a newspaper and in a staff of foreign correspondents. I'd like to capture more of that for the web. We do this with our photographers, we do this with our correspondents and photographers' journals, correspondents' journals, all of which are presented in graphic and photographic form with audio on the internet at the Times on the web. And I keep wondering if there is a way in which this can also be incorporated into an internet journal, a weblog, if you will, at nytimes.com.
The Times is going to have an ombudsman now. Can you imagine the Times having a kind of master blogger?
Oh, I think anything is possible. I don't know that we'd call him a master blogger, but I certainly think that there may be a way in which we could generate assign someone to give us short form journalism on the internet from the campaign, from a war, from a hotspot, from a developing story. These could be short articles. These could be slightly longer pieces. They could be anecdotes. They could be what we call a notebook, a reporter's notebook. They could be all sorts of things that give you a sense of the people, the tensions, the drama, the bells and smells, if you will, of a particular story. And in the right hands, I think it would be compelling reading.
No question. Len Apgar, sum it up. What's the transformative pressure, so to speak, coming out of the blogosphere on the greatest of media institutions, the New York Times?
You know, people think because we're a grand newspaper that's been around for 150 years, that's what we do. I picked that up a little bit here at the conference this weekend at Harvard. And what I like to do is to turn that around and tell folks, we're a 150-year-old company, but we are a 150-year-old growth company. We are an internet company. We are a digital cable company. We are a radio company. We are a first and foremost, best known, obviously, as a newspaper company. We own the New York Times. We own the Boston Globe. We have newspapers in communities throughout regions of this country.
You own a piece of the Boston Red Sox.
We even have a piece of the Red Sox, and after last night, that feels pretty good. But one of the things that I think people lose sight of is that we want to be on the cutting edge. We want to be in a vanguard of this industry. Wherever news is being produced and developed, no matter what the technology is, we think of ourselves as a leader, not a follower. And it's taken 150 years to get here. We want to stay there. We want to be at the forefront of what's happening in the internet and digital cable in newspapering. And we want to play a major role. And that's why I think we have to keep our fingers on the pulse. We have to be thinking of ways in which these technologies, this kind of journalism can work for us.
But I'm sure you've read the Gay Talese account of how the New York Times debated the great question of whether they should eliminate the period after Times on the front masthead. This took committees, it took years, it took Mrs. Sulzberger, and eventually they took that period off. This is a grand old bureaucratic elephant. Is it nimble enough in this moment?
We didn't get to become the leading newspaper website in the world by being a stodgy, slow moving, hide bound elephant. We are a gazelle when we need to be, and we can ponder and debate things that we're not sure about. Those old stories about don't surprise me. We still have lengthy debates about standards and other things that we think we're not quite ready to drop or to change. We have always felt that we had certain levels of taste and decorum that needed to be preserved despite what was happening on cable television or elsewhere. And we still feel strongly about some of those things. But on the other hand, we are a very competitive company, not only in journalism, not only in the newsroom, but also for our stockholders. And that's important to us. And we want to be where the growth is, and we want to be a leader in those areas. We don't want to be a follower or a Johnny-come-lately. So we're not a company that is going to dither when we think decisions have to be made. And my guess is when the chips are down, the company makes, when the chips are down, the company makes decisions quite decisively.
Good luck. I'm sure you do. The Times is the gold standard for me, my favorite paper, and it's now my favorite paper online. Nice talking with you.
Good talking to you, Chris. Good luck.